conception. Starting off with the idea, it's interesting that amongst all the various holidays which the Jews observe, Hanukkah happens to be one of the more fortunate ones. Yeah, well, Hanukkah, what else? Which holiday would you say? Well, Hanukkah and Purim, basically. Now, Purim is not, I believe they're not. Purim amongst the religious. But the non-Orthodox, I don't think that's in Israel, for example, the secular Jews, Pesach, exactly. Pesach, Rosh Hashanah, no, Rosh Hashanah is different. There are certain holidays which have been taken up by the people, and everybody manages to observe them. They become extremely important. And others that are simply ignored, except for the Orthodox. And it's not, the reason for this cannot be seen in the importance of the holiday itself necessarily. Because, for example, Yom Kippur amongst most people will observe, you know, except for those of. But interestingly enough, you'll find, I believe, in Israel, that there's a greater identification with Hanukkah than even with Yom Kippur. Because Yom Kippur are those who still feel some pang of religious feeling, some religious feeling. Yes, exactly. So that even in America, most Jews, even the non-religious will go, they have no other Jewish identity. Yeah, so you did, but Yom Kippur is like that, you know, atonement. Yeah, that's the cleansing. I don't think that's a key factor. I really don't. And you see, in Israel, it has great observance, amongst all of the Israelis. And the Rosh Hashanah, that's what Mayor Kahani said, because it's easy. But there's more to it than that. The fact is, but Purim is also easy. Yeah. But I think there's a deeper reason. I think there's a deeper reason. So I want to take up the true reason. In other words, we have to understand why people have adopted Hanukkah. Pesach is easy to understand also why they've adopted it. And when the reasons that they've adopted are the true reasons, or whether they're in line with the true meaning of Hanukkah. Because sometimes people adopt something because it appeals to a certain emotion. It doesn't mean that that's the true meaning that you see yourself. I think that there are, in general, a certain misunderstanding. For example, everybody knows that we like the Hanukkah lights at night to celebrate the miracles. Now, when we say that, what are we talking about? What miracle are we talking about? My understanding is that the miracle that we celebrate on Hanukkah, the miracle of the light, and every way you go now, and you see her, the car, we approach the place, now everybody's got the menorah there, you know. Even the Goyim can pronounce Hanukkah. When I was there, we used to be Chanukah. Nobody knew what this was, right? And commemorating the fact that there's only enough oil for one night. But if you look into it, you'll see that this is really not true. That this is not the miracle that we're commemorating. First of all, what the Gemara says that women are chayav. Women are chayav in the Erech Hanukkah. Even though it's a mitzvah that says man zom, positive to man based on time. Because Ahen, the famous Ahen, they too were involved in the miracle. And there's two explanations that are given how they were involved. One is that they were involved because the decree applied to them as well. The decree of the Greeks applied to them as well. The Rambam explains that there was a special decree against the Jewish women to break down, the Rambam says it's openly, to break down the whole idea of the kedusha of morality. He says that every Jewish woman that when she got married, so she was forced to have sexual relations with the Greek, their governor. The other one says that it's because the women were instrumental in the name. Yehudit, the whole story of Yehudit had to destroy what? Right. So either way, so there's two reasons. Either they're involved in the miracle because they were saved by the miracle, or because they were instrumental in bringing about the miracle. So you see one thing from this. What do you see from this? Really? Yeah, that's right. That the miracle that we're talking about, if the miracle that we're talking about is the miracle of the light, of the candles, so the women weren't involved in that in any specific way. So, you see clearly from this that the miracle is not the miracle of the life. They're talking about something else entirely. Another question is that the idea of the miracle of the life itself is problematic. Because what happens? After they defeated the Greeks, and they went back to the base and they to the temple, and they rededicated it, and then they needed light, you know, for the menorah and the base on the desk. And there was only enough oil, kosher oil, for one day, and the miracle wasn't lasted April. But that would be, why would that require a miracle? Why is that significant? Why is that important? I mean, let's assume that there was no miracle. Let's assume that they only had enough oil for one day. So what would be the judgment? Well, we have a halakhic system. In general, where do we find that God intervenes to enable us to perform mitzvahs? There are many mitzvahs that we don't perform today because we can't. Because, well, those that are contingent upon the land, but we're in exile. And even though we have Eretz Yisrael now, but we don't debate on Mikdash, we have some hedging and so forth, and there's no concept that God will perform miracles to enable us to perform a mitzvah. But in general, if a person's in a situation where he cannot perform a mitzvah, so what does the halacha say? The halacha says that honest Rahman of Hatre. That's the father. In fact, you know that the mitzvah of stitching, the fingers, you know, on the palace, the way we do it today is not really in the best way, because you're supposed to have a blue, one of the fingers is supposed to have chalet, blue, a special blue dye. And we don't have that, because that comes from a special fish, chalazon, and at different points in history, there were certain individuals who held that they had visas, or whatever the case may be. So we've had, but we don't have it. As far as we're concerned, we don't have chalet. So the law is that you can have tippet even without chalet. When you have chalet, it's a higher level. But is there any idea that God can perform a miracle so to enable us to find the chalet? There's no such idea. So why then was it so important that God should perform a miracle and that should become so? So they waited the other way. They waited long enough, right? They hadn't had the Beit HaMikdash for many, many years. And now they have the opportunity. So it took 8 days to produce the Shemen. Why is it so significant? What's the meaning? Moreover, if you take a look at, and before I go further, I just want to also, I mentioned that the, that women are included in this. Women are included in this. But it's an interesting way the mitzvah is set up. Because the halacha is ne'er ishi beito, which means that one candle suffices for the entire household. For example, the man, or the woman could light. If the man lights two candles, so every member of the family is yosef, his wife and his children, and so forth. Conversely, if the man is coming home late, you know, because you're not supposed to eat before you light the ne'er. So his wife can light for him, and she likes it because it's ne'er ishi beito. So I'd like to understand why that itself should present us with the question, why is that so? It's not true of Mishnah Megillah, of reading the Megillah. And the Megillah, of all the Rambam puts the laws of Megillah and put them together in one section. Because they're very similar. Whoever is obligated in the Megillah is obligated in the context. But both of them are, both holidays have been established over the concept of what we call Pirsume Nisa, to publicize the miracle of salvation with the church. Now, by Megillah, men are chayav and women are chayav. But there's no concept of one every household. If the man of the household reads the Megillah, so his wife is Yosef, she's Yosef, she listens to the reading. You see, but here you're Yosef, if you're in New York, you know, busy or shopping, whatever it is, and your husband likes you, so then that's it, you weren't even there, but simply because you're part of the household. I'd like to try and understand that, if you can. But again, this would be a matter of speculation. Why it's structured that way? It could be that each person should have life. In fact, there is a Mahadran, as you know. There's the Mahadran because the basic requirement of the law is be one life, one chain of living. Now, then we like, you know, we add it to show how many, how long the miracle occurred. All right, then there's also a Mahajan, Minah Mahajan, who lights for every member of the family. Okay, he lights every member of the family. So then, in other words, the most preferable way is that each member of the family lights themselves, the husband, the wife, the children. But you don't have to. I mean, if, as I said, the yotzei is a mitzvah if you rely on your husband's wife. So the way the mitzvah is structured, it's structured so that a person does not have to do it himself. Now, why is that true? I'm going to try and deal with that. Now, if you take a look at the Ahanitim, which we say in Shmon Esrei, which we say in the Birkas Hamazon, and this is, you know, giving praise to God for the miracles, the salvation, etc. Then you read the story. It tells you the whole story of Hanukkah. We made Matisyahu, Kohen Gadol Chasanei Yevanov in the days of Matisyahu. That's also an interesting idea. Why it fits with the time period by Matisyahu? It should have said in the days of the second by his name. Why in the days of Matisyahu? And if you're going to pick out a figure who represents the individual who's instrumental, who would you think of? Who you thought was the hero? Yehuda Maccabee. Matisyahu died very soon after the beginning of the revolt. Interesting why it's associated with Matisyahu. And then it speaks about the family of Malchus Yevnarsha when the wicked, the kingdom, the Greek kingdom, gained supremacy over the Jews and to destroy the Torah and so forth. And you guys intervened and you fought their battle, avenged their revenge. You gave over the mighty into the hands of the weak and the many into the hands of the few and so on and so forth. And you made a great name for yourself in the world. And a great salvation for the Jewish people. Then it says afterwards they came into your house, the Beit HaMikdash, and cleaned it out, and they purified the Mikdash, and they lived the life. It doesn't mention at all the miracle. It just says, there's Miki Neiros Pachatos Pachacham. It just says that they, after this great salvation, they lived the life in the courtyards of your holy place, and then they established these 8 days of Hanukkah to give praise and thanksgiving. But it doesn't mention at all that there was a miracle in the Beit HaMikdash. So that is very strange that if that is the miracle of Hanukkah, that this would be omitted from the Al Hanukkah. Okay? So those are some of the questions that I'd like to take up. Okay, are there any? Yes, Ramam says, I shall retain my way, until God has mercy on them, the God of our fathers. Boshia miyadam. And he saves them from the hand, the Tilam, the Gavru b'nei Chashmonaim HaKohanim HaGadolim, and the sons of the Chashmonaim, who were Kohanim HaGadolim, became powerful, and they killed them, and they saved Israel from the hand. Then they established the kingdom from the Kohanim, and the kingdom returned to Israel for more than 200 years, until the second destruction. So what the Rambam over here is telling us is this is the essential miracle. The miracle was the victory. The victory of the Maccabees against the Greeks. Because, and this was done only because God had mercy. You see that this victory was not simply a result of great planning or the natural factors and so forth, but it was clearly a miraculous phenomenon. Then he says, in Allah Bay, who could have Isaiah, the Yibdom, then he says when they did this, it was on the 25th of Kislev, and they entered into the base of the Jewish, and they didn't find pure Shemen, except one small pitcher, which was enough only for one day, and they lived amidst the Neros for 8 days until they were, he just tells us a matter of fact. So now he gives us, Allah tells us one miracle, Allah tells us another miracle. So what is the connection? Excuse me, what is the connection between them? Do you have a question, Lori? The Rambam clearly implies, that, yeah, then he says later on. Right. No, he doesn't say. He doesn't say. He said it is a miracle. Clear. Oh, no, excuse me. He says, last, it's reliable, the Hadith of Yom Nechabavaz, at least in the nearest Amarach of Yom, that's obviously a miracle. We've named that because of this, the Chamu Mesakim. If this is the 8 days, from the 20th of Kislev on, days of Simcha, rejoicing and Hallel and praise, from my Zikin Ben Amiros, Bara, and also Kaya Button, Acholai, Vlad, the Son of Elos, Laharos, the Wagalos, Hane. He says, we light these candles for 8 days to demonstrate and to reveal the miracle. But he didn't say which miracle. He now has two miracles over here. Now, what I'd like to say is like this, that what was the real miracle? The real miracle that was celebrated is the miracle of the victory. The victory, as the whole Adithim talks about, that the miracle of the few against the many, of the weak against the strong, of the righteous against the wicked. I mean, there's a lot of different descriptions. All right? That's the real miracle. That God is the being, that according to the laws of nature, according to the laws of nature, the Maccabees should not have won. Because it was simply, no matter how brave they were, and courageous, and no matter how intelligent they were, and used the guerrilla tactics, guerrilla warfare, and all that, still, they would have been overwhelmed. The Greeks were the mightiest empire in the world at the time. So, if the situation was determined purely by the laws of nature, then the Maccabees would have been destroyed. There was nothing. In fact, you see, and we have other instances of heroism in our history, even in the Holocaust, when unfortunately the Jews were taken by surprise and so forth, and many were just exterminated without resistance. But there were cases, the Warsaw Ghetto, for example. It's tremendous. If you read the stories about the Warsaw Ghetto, tremendous instance of courage and heroism. How they withheld a group of young boys and girls, basically. They were just teenagers, and they saw what was happening, and they decided they'd rather go down fighting rather than go like sheep to the slaughter. And they used ingenious methods of communications, sewer systems, and was making Molotov cocktails, and an unbelievable courage. And they managed to hold off the German army longer than the entire Polish nation had resisted against Germany. So it was an unbelievable chapter of heroism, but they were defeated. Because it's impossible. I mean, in the laws of nature, it was impossible. And it wasn't, there was no nation, in other words. There was no nation of the Jews of the Warsaw Ghetto. Who perhaps wants to say that they achieved that fight. Yeah, I understand. But there was no nation that they could be victorious. That as far as the victory, who would win it? Now, that's what the Rambam is saying. One second. That's the Rambam is saying. Okay. The Rambam is saying that. And the thing is like this. So what was the purpose then? So now everything is fine. Now everything is fine, and they've returned, and they're going to rededicate the base of the temple. So it takes 8 days to get the oil. So what was the purpose? All right. The answer is exactly what Rambam is talking about. Because without the nace of the Nair, then the Jews would really not have had any way of knowing whether they won, because they simply were better and they were superior in terms of the natural forces. They had won. So this nace was different than other nations, than other miracles. This miracle did not involve any open, overt breach in the laws of nature. It was the Derech HaTeva. And the same is true, by the way, the same is true in the story of Purim, that it had, the way it manifested itself was not like Tzvi Thompson, or not like by when they entered and the walls of Jericho fell down. This was all done in the framework of the Teva. Now, when a miracle occurs in the framework of the Teva, no matter how astounding it may appear, you can't know for sure. Now, the classic illustration, I would say, in our time, would be the case of Vietnam. I know you still haven't said Israel. Let's hold off on this, guys. I'll get to that in a second. It's like this. If you read the history of Vietnam, it would seem like it was a small nation, the nation of Vietnam, the North Vietnamese, actually, and faced tremendous odds. First, they managed to defeat, they were fighting against South Vietnam, which was supported by the West. They managed to defeat France, and France was a world power at the time, but then having defeated France, they then took on the United States, the mightiest power in history. I mean, this is what took place against Iraq. And they were able to withstand and to emerged at first to drive the United States out with all that superior armaments and weaponry and so forth. Now, was this a miracle of God, that God endorsed what they were doing? Or was this something which happened, which can be explained in terms of a natural phenomenon? Yeah. Well, it could be, yeah, look, it could be either one, but certainly you can explain it in terms of a natural phenomenon. If you study it, you can explain it. Because you see that even though they were fighting against France, but there was a tremendous amount of dissension, and the way that they were inherent limitations on how they fought the war, and the soldiers weren't the best, and they made mistakes. You see, I'm trying to show you, you see, the thing about this, if you are, that's nice for you to say, but if you are a North Vietnamese communist, and when you saw the Americans being driven out, you would say it's a miracle. Because you know what you struggled from and how you started with the most primitive weaponry and they're the most sophisticated and how you won, and you could make a nice case and show how this battle over here, we were just about defeated and so forth. The truth of the matter is that everything can be explained. And especially, in the United States, there's been many books written about the way we conducted the war and so on and so forth. That if we really wanted to, we could have gone in there and bombed North Vietnam. But they complained that, yeah, but why didn't we? Because we were afraid of Russia. But that's what they could say, that that's a miracle, that God gave us that shit, whatever. All I'm trying to tell you is that when a phenomenon occurs like that, you really have no way of knowing for sure, because everything you're going to point to can also be explained in a natural way. So therefore, no matter how astounding, the fact that the Maccabees defeated the Greeks, still in all, you cannot say for sure that it was because God endorsed it, and because it was God wanted you to win, and it was the Ashkaka of God that enabled you to win. That was the miracle of the man. See, when they came back, that's why the Rambam brings it in. When they came back and they rededicated the Beit HaMikdash, and they only had enough salmon for one day, and God extended it for 8 days, that was to demonstrate that the reason why they won was because God endorsed what they were doing, and it was all the Nachamayim, was the miracle. And if that is true, that's the whole question about, we're not going to take it up right now, but there's an interesting concept of controversy around Yom HaTzimut. Was it to say Hallel on Yom HaTzimut, or whether or not to say Hallel? Or that's Israeli Independence Day. Is it not to say war? In 1948, and then the fact they were victorious in the first war and so forth. Again, all the great victories of Israel could be explained as miracles, miraculous, but a person who knows, military policy and so forth could explain to you how these things turn out. So you don't know for sure. There's no real way of knowing for sure, because we don't have a Navi. We don't have a prophet to tell us that. So, the chart over here is like this, that both miracles were essential, but the miracle that we're giving praise for, Achim, is the miracle of the victory. Because we were fighting, the Jews were fighting for the preservation of Torah. And Achim, they too. Also. But the miracle of the Neros is really an indicator that the victory took place because God endorsed what they were doing. You know what I'm saying? In other words, in and of itself, like I said, it wasn't really necessary. So what if they would have to wait 8 more days? What made it necessary was God wanted to demonstrate to the Jews that because they acted in this way, that they were ready to give up their lives for the preservation of Torah, and they fought for the true purpose, and they were fighting for the true purpose. Because as soon as they were victorious, the first thing they did was to go back to the Beit HaMikdash. So when the Jews did tshuva, and they return to the true ideas, and they're prepared to move their very existence for the sake of Torah, so then God will fight with them. God will help them, and they have to be destroyed. So that explains the Al-Hanisim. So in the Al-Hanisim, we're talking about one thing and one thing only, the victory. The victory of the few over the many, and so forth. And in the end, it just mentions that they came back to the Beit HaMikdash, not to tell you about the miracle of the life, but because he's coming back to the Beit HaMikdash, he reflects upon the entire purpose of what they were fighting for. Validating the miracle. Okay. Now the next question I want to take up is, if it was necessary for God to show them, to demonstrate to them that the war was not just a natural event and it was really miraculous. So why did God choose to do so through the Nero, by this particular means? It could have been many, there could be many ways which God could have imitated them. Was it just happenstance, arbitrary, that God chose to demonstrate it this way, or is there a significance? The names of the Nair and the names of the victory is really one thing. That's the same. And that's the reason why we demonstrate the miracles through the Nair. And how we demonstrate through the Nair, and the reason why it was done that way, because the Nair represents what they were fighting for. It's only because they were fighting for these true ideas of Torah, and that's what Ne'er represents. What's the expression, Ne'er Mitzvah, the Torah Or? In other words, Ne'er is always symbolic of enlightenment, of understanding, of wisdom, of Torah. So that's why God allowed it to continue burning for a day, but it doesn't say, not to stop as any indicator to show, but that's precisely what they were fighting for. They were fighting for Torah. They were fighting for Mitzvah. So because they were fighting for Torah and Mitzvot, so that's why they were victorious. So the two Nisim are really one. And then in lighting the light, you're really telling the story of the victory. And the story of the victory is that when the Jews return to the two ideas of Torah, so then they can be assured that they're not to fear any force on earth. There's no force on earth. Now my next question is, on the basis of what we said, would this help? Anybody think of any reason, the formulation, it's a beta. A man and his household, which is to say that one, that the vehicle through which we fulfill the mitzvah to a household, as opposed to each individual. For example, like every man, matzah, each person has to eat. You can't have one person in the household eating. Matzah, you can't just have matzah for a household. The point is, but just, what Jackie was saying, I think is correct, that it's not just the idea of learning Torah, but the what they were fighting for was the preservation of the entire system. So when people learn Torah, they have to realize that you're learning Torah to yourself, because of your own protection, but the field of Talmud Torah is not complete unless you teach it to others. In other words, part and parcel with the obligation of learning Torah is to perpetuate the entire Torah system. That's why it's interesting to see the, and that means that he's not just doing it by himself, because he's how is that by an off generation, that's to the bias. In other words, the bias is the vehicle through which the whole system is transmitted. That's why the mishpacha has such significance in the whole Jewish system, the family unit. Marriage, that's why marriage is so important, because the mishpacha of having children. But the whole unit of the family. To say so, because the Torah can only be perpetuated through a system which is based upon the integrity of the family unit. That's why the mitzvah is so important. And throughout history, that's the only way the Torah could have been preserved and passed down. So it could be, I'm just speculating now. It's purely my own speculation. That, in other words, what we're demonstrating is the miracle that the system was saved. Not just that so that one individual or another individual could study, but that the entire nation could perpetuate the system of Torah. And that's reflected, how do you reflect it? What's the basic unit through which the nation operates? The unit of the family.
So then why is there
I get back to the reason. You see, the reason why people are attached, why they identify with Hanukkah. I think that people are, there's certain false concepts that people have about Hanukkah. And I think the two main concepts, what do you say the two main concepts that people identify Hanukkah with? No, aside from the, let's assume there was none. Oh, yeah, it's a nationalistic thing. That's why you find even the Israelis, because by and large, what I found is that in Israel, in America, you have religious and non-religious, but even the non-religious are not that, don't have such a strong feeling of opposition to religion. By the time when I was in Israel, when I spoke to others, there's a certain type of Israeli mentality that is really anti-religious. And because they have, see, in America, you don't have any other identity as a Jew. If you don't have some connection to religion, then you have no Jewishness at all. You have to identify somewhere. Yeah. But in Israel, secular feels doesn't feel their guilt. They feel that they're part of the Jewish people. It's the nationalistic. So what they now, in fact, they don't like the religious because they look at the religious as detracting from the nation. You know, throughout history, the Jews had the ghetto mentality, and they weren't they didn't resist, they didn't fight, and so forth. And the state and the army, that cures, that solves all our problems. So, but one thing that, but they identify with the Maccabees. We see they have the Maccabee games in Israel. Maccabee, yeah, the Maccabee thing. That's because they identify that with that nationalistic ideal.
How could you take
their
oath at the
Pentagon
on Hanukkah?
At the Pentagon on Hanukkah. Hanukkah is very big. Hanukkah. Well, Masada also, because it was, Masada is very big also. But that's a false idea. You see? That's a false idea. They weren't, had they been fighting for purely nationalistic reasons, then they were, there was one. But it was not, in other words, the idea of the nation, yeah, of course to preserve the nation, but only because that's the mechanism to preserve the nation. And that's why they went exceptional. The Achim Bali, they returned immediately to the state of Israel. Any other cause that motivated them, they wouldn't have returned to the state of Israel. They would have celebrations and parades and, you know, victories and so forth. So that's one false idea. The other false idea, and this is an amazing thing, you find especially the conservative and the reform, they all love Hanukkah. And they think that the ideal of Hanukkah is freedom. It's freedom of religion. So freedom in general, you know, it's like it becomes a universal kind of freedom of human freedom. And freedom of religion amongst the conservative and reform, but to them this indicates they're fighting for freedom of religion. And as though that gives them a certain amount of justification. And the answer is that that's completely absurd. They were not fighting for freedom of religion. They weren't fighting for freedom from oppression. There was no ideal of freedom. They were fighting for Torah. Now, in order to practice Torah, they had to be free of oppression. But they weren't fighting just for the sake of freedom. Baraya, you see that how did it begin? And I'll tell you, I'll explain to you why. It'll be the last bit of why. It's the name Matisyo. Why is Matisyo, what did he do that was so unifying God? Or what did he do? Why is it to do with him? Yeah. Because what happened was the Greeks were trying to, you know, subjugate people to break their will. So they go into a different town, gather people together, and they force them to worship an idol. And then, you know, they have one person who was set up from the Jews, who was willing to go along with them, a Hellenist, and he set an example, and the others would follow. So they came to the city of Modin, and that was where Matisyahu was there with his five sons, and the Greeks got this one individual, so he was going to, you know, bring a sacrifice to the idol. A Jewish person, and Matisyahu ran out, and he killed him, and he killed the Greek, and that's when he, you know, he screamed out, "Milai Shemelai, whoever is the God, come with me," and they ran off into the mountains, and that began the movement. Now, you see, it's an interesting thing. Then he died shortly thereafter, and the wars were conducted by his five sons, and ultimately it was Judah HaMaccabee, who was the great military strategist, and he was responsible for the victory. But it attributed to Matisyahu. Why? Because without Matisyahu, there wouldn't have been Yehuda. Even though Yehuda went on, there's a difference. It's interesting, you find it by, in some essay, it's to say, Elohim Abraham, the God of Abraham, Isaac, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, but the bracha ends, Magen Abraham. And the Lord says, Bechacha, with you, the bracha ends, and then not with the others. Indicating that somehow Abraham was greater. How was he greater? As I'll say that amongst the others, he was the choice of Yaakov. Yaakov was the first of the others. I'll explain that as opposed to your person, but next week we're going to. Which means to say that Yaakov perhaps was on a higher level, more advanced than Abraham. So what was the greatness of Abraham? The innovator. The greatest of you. We spoke about this last week. About the innovator. The ability to come out of nowhere and to discover something which the entire world is against. So he lives in an environment, in a framework of idolatry, and that's the way everybody functioned, that's the way everybody thought, and was raised with the same feelings, the same emotions, to be able to go against the entire world. That's Avram, Eber HaEchad. Avram is on one side, the entire world is on the other side. And to come forth with a new idea and to establish it, something completely different, that's a unique type of greatness, and Yitzchak and Yaakov may not have had it. Which means to say that you're supposed to be a pioneer in a new field, discover a new type of psychology, discover a new type of physics. He makes the basic discovery. Now let the others go on, and he's an aider, greater mind, utilizing his method. The fact that they're greater does not mean that had they lived at his time, they could have made a discovery. To be able, that's two different forms of greatness. Yeah, I could take somebody else's method, and I may be smarter than him, and go 10 times further than he could have gone. But that does not mean to say that I could have made the original discovery. And that's the greatness of Machu Picchu. That when the entire people was demoralized, and basically they were defeated, they were in a state of total defeat. And everybody accepted that there's just nothing we can do. They were just like the Jews when they fought against the Nazis, total demoralization. There's nothing we can do. A state of complete helplessness. So Machu Picchu said, no, you left and I left. We can do it. And he stood up and he killed the Greeks. And he launched the revolt. And he put them into an entirely different mentality. Now, once they were in that mentality, then now they began to fight, and they began to resist, and they resisted. He died soon after. He didn't participate in the great battle. But if there was no one to show, they couldn't have been used. So, those are the, that's why I think it's an attraction, because people are attracted to this idea of freedom, and there is no, we're not fighting the freedom of religion. Because those Jews that went along with the Greek state, they were killed. The Hellenists, the Maccabees, when they began to fight back, they fought against the Hellenists as well. They killed the Hellenistic Jews as well. So there's no freedom of religion. It's basically freedom from oppression for the sake of the truth. And if a person doesn't have that concept, he believes that, you should be free to practice whatever you want, then he can't participate in Hanukkah. That's not Hanukkah. And the secular notion is that the triumph of the nation, the nationalistic, is a false idea. If it's rooted just in the emotion of nationalism, it's only the sake of preserving the regard.